Sainam, dear listeners, and a warm welcome to this week's episode of Radio Sai Answering Booth. This is a show where we invite questions from you listeners on practical spirituality, and I, Prem, your friend from Team Radio Sai, try to answer them based on Swami's message. Yes, we do deal with a lot of questions that are purely philosophical in nature. Nothing wrong in that really, but what is more important today is to bring spirituality into everyday life. What is the point of food that does not energize us to carry out our actions? What is the point in understanding the science behind sleep, but not getting a good night's sleep to wake up fresh to face the day? Every object, every pursuit and action comes with a purpose attached to it. When the purpose is not served, the object, act or pursuit becomes completely meaningless, isn't it? Well, that's what Swami says about this human birth too. If you are born a human but do not try to fulfill the purpose of a human birth, are you still a human? Similarly, what is the point of that spiritual learning that does not help me live my life? What is the use of that philosophy that does not improve my perspective of life and decision making? That is why it is very important to try and understand Swami's profound message in the context of our day-to-day issues and problems. Thanks to many of you, we have had the pleasure of doing that over and over again. The question we have today is also one such. Well, a spoiler alert coming by. I may be repeating many of the concepts I've spoken of before, even in my reply today. But then sometimes the issues seem different, but the solution may be quite similar. Part of what we should do when we address questions is, we should figure out the nature of the issue, and when we do that, the solution presents itself, or one aspect of Swami's message applies to that question, will become clearer all by itself. But we will get to the question when we get to it. As always, let's begin by offering our most loving pranams and Bhagwan's lotus feet. Before we head to the question of the week, as always, I'm going to share with you a quote I found very profound. These are words of an American entrepreneur and author, James Altucher. I hope I'm pronouncing the name right. I quote, "Honesty is the fastest way to prevent a mistake from turning into a failure." End of quote. As simple as that quote appears, it is really the bottom line of any form of meaningful progress, be it in the field of scientific research, business, or more importantly, the field of spirituality. We all are given to making mistakes, and I guess we're not done doing mistakes anytime soon. But what is important is to recognize and acknowledge a mistake when we have done one. In fact, this is the first greatest favor that Swami does to each of us. Before we come to Swami, we tend to think there's nothing seriously wrong with me, really. Because we all have this habit of justifying our actions, don't we? But when we come before Swami, we suddenly look at ourselves in a new light and we recognize the many, many flaws in us. And Swami, for his part, will not allow us to overlook them. He makes us acknowledge each of them because only then we will work towards getting rid of them. Otherwise, they are but a ticking bomb. At some point, we would have made far too many mistakes that we must have a big, big fall. We refer to the fall as failure, but I'm not sure there are any failures in the spiritual path. Yes, we can slip every now and then, and one can slip even in the last step of the journey, but there are no failures in this path. But if we correct ourselves and correct our mistakes, that itself becomes our stepping stones. And for that, we must acknowledge mistakes as mistakes. And for that, we must be honest with ourselves to begin with. Otherwise, we can keep looking the other way or justifying our deeds till a point when there will be an obvious course correction and we will have to slip to the level where we actually belong. In our epics, there is this classic story of how King Kaushika becomes Brahmarishi Vishwamitra. When he begins doing penance, the gods send the damsel Menaka to distract him. And Kaushika falls for it and fathers a child with her, in fact. But then he recognizes that he has fallen prey to the weakness of lust. And then he resolves to strengthen himself and does further penance. Next time, the gods send a damsel by name Rambha. And she also tries to distract him. The sage, who has won over his lust by now, gets very, very enraged at this damsel who's come to distract him, and then he curses her. But after that, he realizes that now he has not overcome the vice of anger. He has overcome the vice of lust, but he has fallen prey to anger. And he starts repenting and further doing penance. Apparently, Mother Lakshmi, who is seeing this sequence of events, asks Lord Narayana, why is fate playing such a cruel game with the sage? One in a million take to the spiritual path as steadfastly as he has done. Shouldn't the Lord be helping him instead of repeatedly sending obstacles in his way? Then Lord Narayana says, I am indeed helping him. I am showing him where his fault lies. And the great sage is conquering that mistake in him and becoming stronger and stronger. In contrast, Swami would speak of a character like Ravana. He accomplished much. He even pleased Lord Shiva through his devotion. He knew that he was falling prey to lust. His wife warned him, Vibhishana and even Kumbhakarna warned him. But he chose to look away. When one does that, it is equivalent to building an edifice on a weak foundation, knowing well the foundation is weak. It's just a matter of time, because at some point the building is going to collapse. That is why, if we recognize and are honest enough to acknowledge our flaws and mistakes, that very act will lead to our progress. Otherwise, we are only preparing for a big collapse, built using our small mistakes. Before we head to the question, dear listeners, permit me to read that quote by American entrepreneur, author James Altucher one more time. I quote, honesty is the fastest way to prevent a mistake from turning into a failure. Let's head to the question that we have for this week. The person who sent us the question wishes to be anonymous. So she sent, I think it's an interesting question, especially for those of us who are part of Swami's organization, be it in Prashanthi Nilayam or elsewhere. I have Sister Sumana, as always, to read out the question for us. Let's listen to the question and we'll see what answer we can come up for that.
Sairam, I'm a young adult leader in my country. I'm committed to the responsibility given to me. It is very important for me because Swami entrusted me and gave me this role. Therefore, it is my dharma to perform my duties well and to focus more on spiritual development. There are some leaders who do not perform the given task, meet deadlines, give no response to emails, messages, and we have to follow up with them a zillion times. Sometimes, when we question them, all they say, I have no time, I missed the email, and various other excuses. Sometimes, I do get demotivated by them. How do I deal with these Sai leaders and with myself, who might have a little more expectation on Sai leaders? Thank you.
That was the question, and I don't know how many of you are nodding your head and saying that, yes, that's exactly what we face too. So how do you deal with these kind of people, especially in the Sai organization or other younger adult leaders like the person who's asking the question itself? Well, I don't think there is any one way of doing that. There is no one template that you can follow. It purely depends on each individual, and of course it's case to case basis. And I'm saying this with regard to getting them to do what you think is the appropriate action for their role, right? So is that what you are supposed to expect from them? Well, we'll discuss that eventually as we go through the answer, but this is one reality I think we all need to acknowledge. The world is filled with all kinds of people, and that's not going to change anytime soon. It's not going to change at all. You know, all kinds of people are there. There are people who are very good and harmless, but then they lack enthusiasm in work. There are people who are very, very active and effective, but they don't have pure intentions, or their ways are very rude and rough. Then there will be those who are very devoted and very sincere in work, but then they lack the ability, or they lack the understanding to probably complete a task comprehensively. Then, of course, we'll have people who are good, who are very polite. Maybe they were too polite to refuse a responsibility which came by their way, and probably they were not meant for that responsibility at all. So they accept it, but then they're not able to keep up, they're not able to live up to the expectations of that particular role that is given to them. Of course, I'm not mentioning the people who purely are there with negative intentions and their approach is negative, they're selfish and, you know, those kind of people are also there, but I'm saying that even in among the people whom we probably would label as good people or good intention people, I think all these kind of people will be there. And especially when you're looking at Swami's organization and Swami himself is meant for all kinds of people. It's not like a corporate entity where you have a filter in the form of an interview process or an appraisal process wherein you can filter out people who do not have the appropriate skill set or leaders who do not have the requisite leadership qualities or initiative. They kind of get left out as the company progresses. You know, those kind of things never happen. Even in a corporate scenario, I think you'll find all these kind of people. When you have to work with a team, you'll find people with coming with different levels of motivation and different levels of commitment, right? It's even so in Swami's organization because of the fact that it is an open organization. It is meant for all kinds of people, right? That's why I'm not trying to justify this kind of lackadaisical behavior, but I think we must always be ready to encounter all of these people, especially in the Sai organization. And what makes it more complicated is there will also be many different views on how a certain task has to be done or how a particular project has to be dealt with, and all of these backed by good intentions. In fact, that makes it even more difficult. And if somebody comes with a crooked intention, you can recognize that person and you can keep that person out. But a lot of suggestions will come which is counter to our approach, which also are based on good intentions, right? So to say the least, if you are not facing such problems in the Sai organization, I guess you must start wondering, is everything going fine? Am I really in the Sai organization? I'm just kidding, but I'm just saying that you need to be aware and be prepared for meeting many such people in the course of carrying out the task that Swami has given to you. But the important thing to address in your question is about getting demotivated, right? That's what you said towards the end of your question. You said working with people like this is making me get demotivated, right? So that is the thing we have to address. So why do we get demotivated when we are given a certain task? When we start any task, we have in our mind a certain idea of success, right? When is that activity successful? When a certain target is achieved, right? That's when we would term that particular activity or that particular task we've taken up as a success, right? Or even if you break it down to say smaller stages in a project, it's not always about just the end product. You break it down into smaller success points. And when you do that, if you do not meet these points as you go through the project or as you're conducting that particular activity, then you expect to come across those successes as you're doing your task, right? So when these don't happen, especially after you have done your part to the best of your ability and you don't see the success, I think that is when we start getting demotivated, right? And added to that, as you explained, in the Sai organization, you also expect a certain kind of behavior from others, and especially from seniors and from elders. We kind of look up to them and we expect some certain kind of ideal behavior from them. And when that doesn't come forward, it's all the more frustrating, right? So this is how we get demotivated, especially in Swami's organization when you're given roles and tasks to perform. This is quite natural, but what is the point of bringing our regular work culture, whatever we do, you know, I'm sure even as you are dispensing this particular role that you have in this Sai organization, you must be having your own professional duties too, either in the corporate or you must be working elsewhere. Now, we have a certain work culture when we do things in our professional life. And when we do things probably when we work outside or when we work at home, what is the point in bringing that work culture to the work that we are doing for Swami? In fact, it's got to be the other way around. what we do, when we work for Swami, when we're doing Swami's work, there is a certain approach to the work itself, right? When you're doing quote-unquote Swami's work, and that experience that you get when you're doing Swami's work, that learning, that approach is supposed to be taken and it should seep into all the other work that we do as a student, as a homemaker, as a executive in a company or whatever it is. But we tend to do the mistake of bringing from outside our work culture and trying to apply it in Swami's work, right? I think this is one of the key points. I'll try to focus on this because, as I said, my answer cannot be direct to this. It's completely dependent on whom you're dealing with, the seniority of the person, and it really is on a case-to-case basis. But when we are doing Swami's work, I think there is a certain approach to that. There's something that we need to keep in our mind, and that will actually sort out how we do our work itself. That'll set a certain work culture in us, and we must consciously try to take that work culture and implement it in whatever we do, be it our everyday work, be it our work at home, or our effort as a student, whatever it is, that needs to replicate itself in our everyday life. That's the whole idea. Now, when you talk about getting demotivated, if you ask about how to keep yourself motivated, then I think I'll have to refer to probably the most popular, comprehensive, and classic motivational speech ever given. And that's nothing that you've not heard of. It is actually the Bhagavad Gita, right? That is probably the most classic motivational speech you could come across, running through 18 chapters, quite a comprehensive one, right? Why is that a motivational speech? Look at the scenario in which Lord Krishna delivers the message in the Bhagavad Gita. Examine the state in which Arjuna was, the state of mind of Arjuna. Now he says, look, there is a battle in front of me, I'm going to fight. If I win the battle, I'll still be sad because I have lost everyone, right? He would have lost everybody, his relatives and his cousins and his dear uncle and, you know, all of those people who were dear to him. He says that I'll win the battle, but I'll lose all of them. Let's say I lose the battle. I'll again be sad because, I mean, nobody's going to be happier on the losing side, right? But of course, when it comes to Arjuna, Arjuna is very, very confident of winning. He's pretty confident about his abilities, right? But it suddenly occurs to him before he goes into this battle that the results of what he is going to do is actually inconsequential, because whatever be the results, he's still going to be sad, right? Either way, he's going to be unhappy with what is going to happen, right? So he starts asking Krishna, what is the point in me doing my actions at all? So that is why he has lost all his motivation to act. He's completely demotivated. And he says to himself, I mean, he tells Krishna that I want to give up all these actions. I mean, if you read Bhagavad Gita, you'll know the first chapter is all about, Arjuna lamenting. It's called the chapter where it speaks about Arjuna's confusions and laments. So Krishna literally allows him to go on, and he says, you know, this is what is going to happen. I'm going to lose everything. There's no point in me doing anything. What's the point of going and fighting and killing all these people? I'm going to give up all these. I'll become a sannyasi. I'd rather live in the forest, and I don't want a palace. I don't want to be a king, and all of that, he says, right? So in essence, he's saying that I want to take up sannyasa. I want to give up the action that I'm supposed to perform, and I'll become a sannyasi, right? And the beauty is, when you read the Bhagavad Gita, you will see all through the 18 chapters of the Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna will keep coming back to this point. But what about sannyasa? What about if I give up my action? What about I don't do the action at all, right? So his mind is actually fixed on that. He's saying that I'm completely demotivated. I don't want to do any act. I just want to give up these things. I don't want the benefit or the, you know, fame or whatever it is. I'll just go, right? All through this motivational speech that Krishna gives, Krishna very, very patiently explains to him, first of all, the concept of dharma. And dharma is, what is the role that you ought to perform? As you mentioned in your question itself, you said that this is a responsibility that Swami has given to me, and I see this as my dharma. I have to do this act, and this is my offering to Swami, right? So that's what Krishna does. He first explains the idea of dharma and tells him that this is something that you have to do, and if you give up your dharma, there is a difference between giving up action and giving up dharma. That's what Krishna explains to Arjuna. He says, if you give up this action, you're actually giving up dharma. And when you give up dharma, the world is going to scorn at you. You'll be looked down upon as somebody who did not perform his duties, right? Then Arjuna says, okay, Krishna, I'm in a completely confused state of mind. He says, I accept you as my guru. Please accept me as my disciple. You tell me what to do. You explain to me what I'm supposed to do. And that's how Arjuna submits to Krishna, and Krishna then goes on to explain. Krishna tells him a very, very beautiful, the crux of the entire Bhagavad Gita. He says, I understand what you're going through. I'll teach you a way of doing karma. Going back to what I said about Arjuna, he says, I want to give up karma altogether. I want to take up sannyasa. But Krishna tells him, I'll teach you a way of doing karma. Not the way in which you've been doing it all this while. It is the best way of doing it. And if you do the way I'm telling you to do, this karma will not have any consequence and it will not bind you. On the other hand, it will liberate you. Right? And Krishna says, I'll teach you this form of karma, and this form of karma is called karma yoga. Right? So that is what is the essence of what Krishna explains through the entire Bhagavad Gita. And this is why, Bhagavad Gita is probably one of the most important scriptures when we talk about practical spirituality, because it says, it does not talk about giving up the world and running away, but how to implement the most important and most profound spiritual messages in everyday life, right? So that's what Krishna does for the rest of the Bhagavad Gita. He explains the concept of karma yoga. How do you go about doing your actions in such a manner that the actions do not bind you, but they begin to liberate you? And the essence of what Krishna explains to Arjuna throughout this Bhagavad Gita is captured in one single quote of Swami. And that is what Swami says, do work as worship and consider duty as God. Doing karma as an offering to God, or considering the work that we do as God's work, there's some magic in that particular attitude itself. The work we do ceases to be karma and starts becoming karma yoga. Just by saying that, I'm doing Swami's work. Just by telling our mind that what I'm doing is Swami's work. That's probably the essence of the Bhagavad Gita towards the end. That's what Krishna tells Arjuna. That whatever you're doing, you do it as, you're doing my thing. So if you do your actions and prescribe duty perfectly, let's say, and you always do good, as you're saying, in your question, I'm doing the duty perfectly. This role has been given to me. I'm trying to be as sincere to it as possible. That's really commendable, right? So if we are able to do our actions and our prescribed duties so perfectly, and we're absolutely committed, we're doing our best, it is still only good karma. It is still only karma in the best form. It may or may not be karma yoga. But if we perform action with this attitude, that what Krishna tells Arjuna, which we will speak about, then it becomes karma yoga, right? And that is what Krishna tried to drive into Arjuna's head. He said, I'm telling you, this is how karma has to be done. You just obey me, right? And eventually that's what happens. In the 18th chapter, Arjuna submits to Krishna. He says, Karishye Vachanam Tava, you command and I will obey. I am not fighting a war. I'm actually doing Krishna's work. That is the attitude eventually Arjuna comes to. And that is the essence of Bhagavad Gita. If you're able to perform every act that you're doing as God's work, as an offering to God, as an instrument of God, automatically it does some magic to the way we do our work. And there is so much of merit if we can have this attitude that I'm doing God's work, right? But when we are involved in the activities of the Sai organization, right, especially youngsters like you, you must be having your own life, you might be a student otherwise, or you might be doing a professional, you might be having your own professional career, or you might be a homemaker, right? But when we come and get involved in the activities of the Sai organization, be it in the Balbikas, be it in the youth wing, or the thousands of people who come as Sevadal to Prashanti Nilayam, or doing Seva elsewhere, when we start getting involved in activities of Swami's organization, or for that matter, even like us who are working in the ashram here, the idea that I am doing Swami's work you don't have to convince your mind. The mind automatically thinks that it is doing Swami's work, right? Because the mind has already made that division. This is my work, and this is my professional work, and this is Swami's work. So the mind is already thinking that I am doing Swami's work when you go into the Sai organization activity, right? But the idea is, what Swami says is we have to do all the work that we do as Swami's work. But at least in this particular activity that we do, the mind does not need to be convinced. It is already thinking that this is Swami's work. So whatever experience that we have when the mind is thinking that this is Swami's work that I am doing, I think that we'll have to observe our mind and observe our actions very keenly and try to replicate that in our everyday activity, right? That's what is the whole idea of doing anything as Swami's work. So when you're doing this activity in Swami's organization, you've been given this role as being a young adult. Yes, you will face all of these problems, and I'm sure there are some many other unmentioned problems. This is just one point that you're mentioning. The idea is not about solving these problems, or the idea is not about getting people to work the way we think is the right way to work. It is about observing ourselves as to what is happening in our mind when we are doing work as Swami's work. And because I'm going to talk about what Krishna goes on to define what is doing God's work. That's the most important part. We'll talk about that. To observe what happens to our mind and to consciously replicate that in every activity that we do is the whole idea of doing Swami's work. And that's why I said that we should not bring our outside work culture into the organization. But this approach that we have in the Sai organization has to seep into our other works. But of course, you have to bring the professionalism and the commitment that is seen in some of the professional setups. I think that is absolutely admirable, and it has to be brought in to the work that we do. That's what, even in our work in Radio Sai, that's what we keep doing. We try to look at some of these professional media houses, how they go about doing their work. We try to imbibe a little bit of the professionalism, because that is something that we need to bring to our work. But the approach to the work itself is the other way around. What we learn here has to be taken to what we do elsewhere. I'll come back to our problem at hand, right? You're doing work in Swami's organization. One, there is your work to do. Second, there are these difficult people to deal with. And lastly, you have an idea of what is the goal of this whole process, right? This approach to Swami's work I was mentioning must make all of these three things clear to you. That is, what is the work that you have to do? What is your approach when you are facing obstacles in the form of these difficult people? And what is your idea of the whole purpose or goal of this particular exercise that you're taking up, be it the entire activity or these small activities that you take within the role that is assigned to you? So I'll try to explain this based on three statements that Swami makes. Right, these are statements that Swami makes across various discourses. A couple of them are derived from the Gita directly, but some Swami makes, which spell out Swami's expectations for us. And all these are explanations of how karma can be transformed into karma yoga, which is the very basis of what we are trying to do when we are doing Swami's work. The first statement that Swami makes is kartavyam yogam uchyate. Kartavyam yogam uchyate. For the karma that we perform to become karma yoga, first of all, the action that we perform must be the duty that we are ought to perform based on the place, time and circumstance. This is a very, very important point, because a lot of people think and ask this question, you know, when we say that, oh, you have to just do whatever you do and offer your actions to Swami. A lot of people ask this question just for the sake of argument, not that they really mean it. Even youngsters and even our students would come up with this question. So can I do a wrong act, or can I do a sinful act and offer it to Swami, and it's going to be accepted and it's going to get whitewashed? Well, it's not like how it happens in a political firmament right now, right? You do anything and then you join a party and you're given a clean chit. It's not like that. That is why this statement is very, very important. Kartavyam yogam uchyate. The first prerequisite for karma to qualify to become karma yoga is the karma that you're doing should be the duty of that moment, should be what is expected of you at that particular point in time, right? So this becomes a very continuous process. This is a constant process. At every moment, at every junction in life, you'll have to stop and think, what is it that I'm expected? What is it that is expected of me? What is my role, right? So before doing any act, we must ask ourselves if this is the most appropriate thing for me to do in this current circumstance, right? So people are asking, can I do anything and offer it to Swami and becomes Karma Yoga? No, it does not become Karma Yoga because it does not satisfy this particular premise of what makes karma Karma Yoga. It needs to be good actions and it needs to be the actions that you are meant to perform, right? Let me speak of this in the context of your situation after I mention the next point, because I think I'll be able to combine the two of them and then speak of this. That'll give a clearer picture. The next statement that Swami uses is Yogah Karmasu Kaushalam. This is again a statement you would have heard many, many times. I think I myself have spoken about this statement earlier. Yogah Karmasu Kaushalam. Very loosely translated, this particular statement means perfection in action is yoga. Yogah Karmasu Kaushalam. This is again a statement you would have heard in Swami's discourses. So the first one is Kartavyam Yogam Uchyate. And the second one is Yogah Karmasu Kaushalam. The reason why I'm saying that this is loosely translated as perfection in action is yoga is, I think in my opinion, and I believe most of you will agree to what I'm saying, perfection is a very, very subjective thing, right? In my opinion, only Swami can be perfect. Only when we become one with Swami, I think we can claim to be perfect. We can claim that our actions are perfect. Till that point, I don't think any of us are really perfect in that sense. Any of our actions aren't consistently perfect. I would rather say that this statement, Yoga Karmasu Kaushalam, means the karma that we perform should always be tending towards perfection. Or the karma should be defined by striving constantly for perfection. There's no idea of perfection. I think that will also become clearer as I explain this. For me, an act, for me to act perfectly, you know, to understand what is my duty of the moment becomes very, very important, right? That's how these two statements are interlinked to each other. For me to do the perfect action or to do an action perfectly, I should also be able to be, I should be aware of what is my duty of that moment, right? And that's how these two points are go hand in hand. Without knowing what is my duty, I cannot have perfection in the action that I'm performing, right? Now let's look at these two statements, as I said, in the context of your own situation. You've been given a role and you perform it with a certain commitment, right? That's what you've been saying, that you've taken this as Swami's blessings to you and you want to perform it in a certain way. Going by the first statement, you have to figure out what is your role given the, you know, the particular role that you're playing in the organization. What is your duty at that moment when you are holding this position? Then you have to see how best to perform it, right? So how you deal with different kinds of people, how you get different kinds of people to work, the diplomacy that you employ, to whom you can be strict, where you have to be a little respectful, all of these together define how perfectly you perform your actions. But of course, what I said now is applicable to any kind of work that we do. It is applicable even to the professional work that we do, right? When we are doing something, I mean, that's what makes a leader, that's what makes a good team worker, who is able to get the work done from different kind of people who come with different kinds of, different levels of commitment. We are able to marshal all of them and get the work done, right? That's what is the idea about being a good team worker or being a good leader, right? So first of all, when you're given a role, you have to figure out what is your duty in that particular role that you're playing. You know, who are the people whom you're supposed to push and get work done from, and who are the people whom you're supposed to listen to and you're supposed to be your subordinate to. So the right understanding of your role and what defines the perfection of how you carry out the role, it is defined by all of these people that you're going to come across. So this question of, you know, there are some people who need to be sent 100 mails before they respond. There are some people who are more proactive, who are as proactive as you. There might be some people who are more proactive than you. So to keep an eye on what are the different kind of people whom you have to work with and accordingly defining your action for the current moment is what these two statements stand for. But as I said, this is something that you have to do in everyday life. Even in a professional approach, this is what we all have to do. So how does it become different when it comes to Swami's work? Let's go back to the dialogue between Krishna and Arjuna, right? If the essence of Gita was only Krishna telling, do whatever you do as my work, and then you might ask, why do we need 18 chapters for that? He could have just said, you know, in the first chapter or second chapter when Arjuna says, Krishna, accept me as your disciple, you tell me what to do, I'll do it. He still was confused, but he at least submitted himself to that. At that very moment, Krishna could have told him that, you know, whatever you do, you have to do it as God's work. So you just offer it to me and you go ahead and do it. But Krishna did not do that. One of the things that Krishna does is he defines who is God, or in this case, who is Krishna. He defines himself and also he defines his work. And then with that background, he tells Arjuna, now you perform whatever you're supposed to perform as my work. Right? I think that is the most important thing of doing Swami's work. If we are going to be a part of Swami's mission, if we are going about doing Swami's work, we need to constantly remember who Swami is and what is Swami's work and what is Swami's approach to work. How can we fit into this picture if we are not keeping these two in mind? How can I do Swami's work without understanding what is the purpose of Swami's work, right? So what does Krishna tell Arjuna that he makes this thing so clear to Arjuna? Because the entire Bhagavad Gita is about Krishna clarifying things for Arjuna, and at the end of it, with clarity, Arjuna says, I'm clear of what I have to do now, I'll go ahead and do it. So what does Krishna tell Arjuna? First point is, he says, I have no desires. There is nothing for me to achieve. Right? Imagine you are, you are becoming a part of somebody's mission, you're becoming part of somebody's work, and he says, look, I don't have anything to achieve, I'm not really keen on achieving anything. It's literally like that. Krishna is telling, look, I have no desires, you know, there is nothing for me to achieve in all the three worlds. That's what he says. I have no desires, I have nothing to achieve. So that is the first point that he makes. I have no desires and there is nothing for me to accomplish. The second thing is, he says, if at all anything, I have only come to lead you to your own reality, right? That is what Krishna says, and that's what Swami too has said many, many times. The famous conversation between Dr. Funnybanda and Swami, where Dr. Funnybanda apparently went up to Swami and asked Swami, what is the purpose of your whole organization? And Swami said, see, whatever I do, the organization itself does not have any purpose, but whatever Swami does, it is only to give you an opportunity to understand who you really are, to lead you to your own reality. I think a couple of other incidents which we often quote on radio where Swami said, this is the only task that I have, this is the only mission that I have, to lead you to your own reality, right? So the first point he says is, I have no desires, there's nothing for me to accomplish. If at all anything is there, I have come to lead you to your own reality. The third point is, the task that you are debating whether to do or not, in the case of Arjuna, it is about fighting in the war. The task that you are debating whether to do or not has already been accomplished. If in this plot you do your duty as my instrument, then you will progress. Right? This is what Krishna shows Arjuna, right? That whatever he's trying to do is already been done. It's nothing like he's going to achieve something. And this is, again, something that all through the battle, Krishna keeps reiterating to Arjuna, that don't think that you are the doer. Don't think that you are accomplishing this. Don't think that you are successful. Whatever you're doing has already been done, already been achieved. You are just playing your role as an instrument, right? That's why Krishna says, Nimitta Matram Bhavasavya Sakshi. He says, just be an instrument in this whole play, which is actually written and already accomplished, right? And the fifth point, which I've mentioned here is, of course, I'm sure there might be other points which add to this particular understanding that I'm trying to develop here, but I've just gathered four points. And the fourth point is, what Krishna does is, Krishna shows to Arjuna the Vishwarupa Darshan, right? And he says, I am everything, right? Whatever you are trying to do is my work. And because I am everything, whatever that happens in this world is actually my work. This, I think, is a very, very important point, right? We will come back to this in the end, because this is what has to be used, as I said, when you say I have to learn an approach to work in the Sai organization and try to extrapolate it or let this attitude seep into all the other work I do. Because that's what Krishna does. When he shows Arjuna the Vishwarupa Darshan, one thing is he says, I am everything. He shows this huge cosmic form in which he sees all the soldiers and all the great warriors are all part of Krishna. He says, I am everything. And then he also shows that all of these warriors are actually dying and then they're being reborn and others are dying and others are being reborn. So through the Vishwarupa, he says that whatever task you're asking, should I do this or should I not do this? It's already been accomplished. And the second thing is, whatever you see, whatever you do is all my work. It's all me, right? So Krishna goes on to say, after having understood all this or keeping all of these points in mind, now you do your duty and constantly try and define for yourself what is perfection in action. Right? When you talk about kartavyam yogam uchate and yogah karma sukaushalam, yes, you understand your duties based on the role that is given to you, based on where you are in the station of life, what are the circumstances around you. That is how you define the kartavyam or the duty that you're supposed to perform. But the perfection of that duty now depends on the understanding all of this. Because when you're doing Swami's work, who is Swami? What is Swami's work? What is Swami's work meant to accomplish? All of this has to be kept in mind for the perfection in the action. So now when you're doing Swami's work, we too must keep all of this in mind, right? Let's say we take up a project or we coordinate an event. What do we think? If everything goes well or there are no glitches or the project is completed, then we consider that as success. But then that is your work and my work, right? That is what we are trying to accomplish. We conceive a Mandir program tomorrow. Let's say that all of our students want to come together and do a program in Mandir, right? Now that program, in our mind, as we are conceiving that, our idea is at the end of it, everything should have gone glitch-free. Everybody should have delivered their dialogues properly and, you know, there should not be any technical glitches. And at the end of it, there should be a thunderous applause and, you know, so that's a task well achieved. Now that becomes my work, right? That's how we do work. You and I do work like that. But when we look at it as Swami's work, Swami is not trying to achieve the success of a program. That is not at all Swami's work. Going back to what Krishna defined as my work, he said, there's nothing, I don't have any desire. I don't have the desire that this program should be good. I don't have the desire that people should applaud me at the end of this program. If there is any desire, my only goal is to ensure that you progress spiritually, right? So as you very, very aptly mentioned in your question itself, when you're going through these duties, when you're performing these duties, what is important is to keep an eye on our spiritual progress. Are we progressing spiritually? If we are progressing spiritually, then yes, we are actually accomplishing Swami's work. Otherwise, we are taking up work and we are accomplishing our work, right? Swami's work is accomplished only when we go through a particular exercise and we grow spiritually. That is why when it comes to Swami's work, getting the work done is important, right? It is definitely important. I mean, otherwise we won't take up anything. But more important than just accomplishing the task is we must take everybody along, right? Because in Swami's work, the process itself is the goal. And that's why even when we would put any program in front of Swami, or we would do anything in front of Swami, Swami would give far more emphasis to the unity with which the program is conceived, the unity with which the process has gone, has been carried out, than the outcome itself. If there is, Swami would say this, and you'd have heard it in Swami's discourses too, Swami looks for purity and unity in the process. And when there is purity of intention and the unity, that is taking along everybody in trying to accomplish the task at hand, Swami would say that, you know, Swami gets pleased. That's the divinity aspect. That's why Swami would say unity, purity will bring divinity to that particular task or to that particular place, right? So this is what is the whole idea of doing Swami's work. So when we are doing Swami's work, in your case, like going back to the problem that you raised, that you find these kind of people, rather than getting demotivated, the demotivation comes because you feel that the task is not getting done. You feel that, you know, this is what we need to accomplish and it is not happening. One part of it, of course, one part of the demotivation is because of the expectations that you have of these people and the idealism with which you look at them, and they don't live up to that. That's of course there. But the demotivation comes when we're not able to do what we want to do, and especially when we feel what we are trying to do is good work, or what we are trying to do is work which is going to benefit others. When you take up something which is related to serving others or doing something which is good for others, you always feel even more hurt. Swami, I'm doing something good. Why are there so many obstacles? Why are these things happening? Why can't things go smoothly, right? So when that happens, remember that you need to look, if you're doing that as Swami's work, you have to look for your own spiritual progress. Are you growing spiritually? Last year you did an event. How much patience and forbearance you had? This year you're doing an event. As your patience and forbearance improved, as your ability to control your emotions improved, I think that is what you need to look at. And are you able to take everybody along? Because that is what is Swami's work. It is not the accomplishment of that task or accomplishment of that particular activity that you have taken over. In fact, there's this very, very beautiful story, I'm sure you must have heard it, where God appears in front of a man one day. It's a fictional story, of course. Appears in front of a man one day and, you know, points out to a huge rock in the garden which has appeared from nowhere. And God looks at this man and says, I have a task for you. Will you follow it? And this man says, Lord, whatever you ask me to do, I'll be happy to be a part of your work. And God tells him, I want you to push that rock. And then God disappears. So this man very, very sincerely takes up to this task of pushing the rock. He pushes and pushes and pushes and pushes day and night. He's pushing under the sun, and he's pushing when the nightfall has come. He's been pushing for weeks and weeks together, months together. But this rock is so huge that it is not moving even one inch. And at the end of it, he gets so demotivated, and, you know, he's a good man after all, and he feels that, oh God, I failed my Lord, and my Lord has given me a duty, and I have not accomplished my duty. What have I done? And, you know, I'm useless. These are all kind of thoughts we get into when we are given Swami's work and we are not able to accomplish it, right? I mean, this is a common thing. Anybody who has been in Swami's organization and who has not been able to do what they feel is the right thing to do will be able to empathize with these emotions. You feel that, oh God, Swami has given me a work and I'm not able to do it. So that's how this man is thinking. He's absolutely demotivated and he's sinking into a depressed state. That's when God appears there and says, what happened? Why are you looking so low? So then the man starts crying and says, God, I failed you. I've not been able to do what you wanted me to do. So the Lord asks him, why do you feel like that? Why do you feel that you've not been able to do what I wanted you to do? So he says, look at the rock. It's just exactly where it is. It's not moved one bit. You know, what am I doing? I've tried for months together. It's not moved one bit. Then the Lord looks at the man and said, I asked you to push the rock. Did I ask you to move the rock? And then the story goes, God looks at that rock, and just a look from the Lord, the stone flies from there to the sky. And he says, I don't need you to move the rock, right? He said, the rock I could move any day. It does not even require the least effort from my point. So he says, look at yourself now. Look at your muscles. Look at the way you have grown strong physically. You know, that's what happens if you try to push a wall and you've been pushing at it for months together. You become muscular, right? So the Lord says, look at yourself. You have grown strong. The reason behind asking you to push the rock is so that you will become stronger, not to move the rock. I think this is precisely the case with all of us in doing Swami's work. To accomplish the work, it takes nothing for Swami. And this is something I always tell, you know, when we go out and feed people, when we do poor feeding or when we run a medical camp and trying to cure people. See, when we say that this is Swami's work, who is the Swami that we are talking about? Who is the Swami that we are referring to? Isn't He the Lord who has created hunger? Isn't He the Lord who has created sickness and disease and poverty? He's the one who's created everything. It takes no effort from His point to kind of get done with all of these things. But when He is giving us the blessing of being a part of this work, we must understand and always keep in mind that whatever task I'm trying to do is actually nothing for Swami. He can get it accomplished in no time. But He is making it slow for me. He's putting all these obstacles in my way. He's making this whole process so difficult. It's only because it's not about moving the rock. It's about pushing the rock and becoming strong ourselves, right? So keep that in mind. So work towards Swami's goal. We have our own goal and we have to set our goals. I'm not telling that take up an action thinking that, oh, I don't want to really see the end of the action or see the accomplishment of the task. I'm not saying that. Yes, that is important to define the way we go about doing the work, but work towards Swami's goal, right? That is something that we must keep in mind. And what is Swami's goal? It is our personal growth and the growth of others. Our growth, first of all, is in taking the obstacles head on and about taking everybody along, because unity and personal growth is what really is what really about doing Swami's work. But on the lighter side, don't take this too seriously and try to become an obstacle for somebody else's path, thinking that you are going to help that person progress spiritually. That's not the idea. Don't worry, Swami will ensure that each of us have enough tests to face. You don't have to do that part of Swami's work. I think for our part, we have to try to stick to what Swami expects of each of us, right? So the point is, when we happen to come across difficult people and situations when doing Swami's work, when we're doing good work and face obstacles especially, don't get demotivated. Feel more motivated, because this is what Swami's work is meant to do and this is what Swami's work is all about. And lastly, this idea of everything being Swami's work, right? The Vishwarupa Sarshan is all about that. And Krishna says that people dying is my work, people being reborn is my work, people being saved is my work, people being rewarded is my work, being punished is my work. So when he shows this thing, one point that comes out of this is what the karma yoga that we learn in Swami's organization has to seep into all our actions, because every work is Swami's work, right? The other point is, when organization work is Swami's work, but we consider our own personal or professional work as, no, this is my work, I think that is when we start giving priority to Swami's work. We say, no, this is Swami's work. As you said, the attitude that, you know, this is Swami's work and Swami has given me this work, so I should do it with more sincerity. So the way we prioritize Swami's work over our work will be based on this idea that this is Swami's work, that demarcation that this is Swami's work, and this is my personal work, or this is my family work, this is not that. So that is why I said the idea of perfection is very subjective. There might be somebody within our group who thinks that, no, my family work is also Swami's work and I cannot ignore that part, which I feel is probably a right attitude to have. What is wrong is if we are being lazy and if we are not being committed enough, and then we try to justify that, as I said in the quote in the beginning, it's all about honesty. We need to honestly be able to look at ourselves and say, this is where I'm going wrong. But we do that also. We sometimes justify our actions. I'm not talking about that. But genuinely, there might be some people who feel that, you know, this is where I need to spend more time right now. And this is also equally Swami's work as working in the Sai organization or doing this particular activity in the Sai center, right? In fact, when we were talking to Dr. Narasimhan, who is the main doctor in the mobile hospital, he was telling this very beautiful incident where they were doing medical camps on 12 days every month, equipment. They used to, I mean, they still do that. They take the mobile hospital and there's a roster of doctors. They all go to the villages nearby and they treat patients. They do phenomenal work. If you want to read up about that, it's there on the website. He's a phenomenal person, very, very inspired and inspiring. And he was narrating how at one point he wanted to really expand this work. He was talking to Swami. He was showing the report of whatever they're doing. And he was saying that, Swami, we're doing a lot of work and by Swami's grace, a lot of people are benefiting from the work we're doing. But then he said, but Swami, I want to expand this. We're doing only 12 days a month. We hope that we can expand this. And Swami's response to that was very immediate and spontaneous. Swami said, no, don't expand it. Continue with whatever you're doing. If you look at it, you know, here is a committed doctor and here is a team of committed doctors who are saying that we want to do more for Swami. We want to expand this work. And, you know, you might think that, yeah, if doing X amount of Swami's work is good, doing more of that is more good. But from Swami's point of view, it was not like that. When he said, Swami, we want to do it for more than 12 days a month, Swami said, no, stick to 12 days, because all that Swami said was, Swami said, you have children, those children have to be educated and they have to get married. And he said, no, Swami, I'm talking about the hospital work. It'll be nice if we can expand. Swami said, no, you have children, they have to get married, you have to educate them. The message that Swami was driving is, don't think that that work is not my work. The taking care of your family and providing for them and ensuring that they settle in life properly, that is as much Swami's work as the medical camp that you do as free medical seva in a village. That was the beautiful message that Swami was trying to drive there. And that is what makes the idea of perfection highly subjective, how much time we give to this particular activity. And there's no perfection in that. Nobody is perfectly right. That's a balance that we need to strive for. That's why yoga karmasu kaushalam is, karma starts becoming yoga when the action is tending towards perfection. We are always striving towards perfection. There's no one thing which is perfect. What is perfect for me may not be perfect for you, and somebody might consider that perfect. Somebody might turn up for work at 5 in the morning and find that, you know, this is Swami's work and I need to come early in the morning. But somebody might say that, no, I have work at home. I need to do some of these activities and these are my duties and responsibilities at home. I can come only at this time. I think each one is right in their own way, right? So that perfection has to be derived at by each one of us, right? So, as I said, be aware that we should not do mistakes and justify them. We need to be honest, as I said in that quote. But we should constantly try to tend towards this perfection. So when we start defining our goals more clearly based on who Swami is and what is Swami's goal in trying to make us do Swami's work, I think our motivation will stop depending on the achievement and even the smooth progress towards the achievement, right? Our goals will change. We are not looking at success and defeat, right? We are only saying that, have I done this properly? Have I done this to Swami's satisfaction? Have I done this to my satisfaction? That is what we will look at. The moment that happens, the success and failure of the activity is going to have lesser and lesser bearing on our state of motivation and in turn, our happiness itself. And that's why the third statement that I said that I'll quote is what Swami says, samatvam yogam uchyate. When you're able to do your action with samatvam or equanimity, the results do not affect the way you perform your task. The results do not affect your motivation levels. The results do not affect how diligently you do your work. That is when the action becomes yoga, right? Karma becomes karma yoga. So, kartavyam yogam uchyate, yogah karmasu kaushalam, and samatvam yogam uchyate. And this samatvam will come when we are able to define clearly what is the goal of when we are saying that we are doing Swami's work, right? So, this is the attitude we really have to bring into our everyday work. When we say, I am doing Swami's work, keep reminding yourself, who is Swami? What is Swami's work? What am I trying to achieve? Is it that because many of us do this, we think that we take up a task as Swami's work or Swami's activity and this needs to be achieved. So if so-and-so is not fitting into the picture, you know, get done with him or her, you know, he doesn't fit into a team. Yeah, sometimes we need to take practical decisions like that. But keep in your mind that the idea is not to achieve the end of the activity. Yes, we define our action based on that. But end of the day, Swami's goal is our spiritual progress and the idea of taking everybody along and getting the work done. Perfection, according to Swami, is not perfection in the task, but perfection in the process itself, right? So these are the few points that I wanted to make and probably to end with. Something which one of our teachers in the university would always tell us, you know, is something that you can keep in mind. He would say this, of course, he would say it as a joke, but it really means a lot. You know, you can really make sense of that. He would say, you know, in Swami's colleges and Swami's organization, many, many people come for their spiritual progress. But you should always remember, there are some people who come for our spiritual progress because they are difficult people who actually help us progress, right? So don't make a wish to get done with people who are very difficult to work with, who are not as committed as you are. Take that as challenge. Take that as part of the game, you know, because that is what is going to make us grow. And that is what is going to make Swami's work unique. And even as you're going through this, as I said, don't forget that the work that you do at home is also Swami's work. The work that you do in your professional setup, in your career, that is also Swami's work. And as much as possible, the approach and the knowledge of converting karma into karma yoga that is so easy to learn when we're doing Swami's work has to be learned, and that attitude has to seep into all our other actions. So thank you, sister, for asking that question. I know my answer was not direct. It was quite roundabout. But I think this is really what is meant to be learned when we're doing quote-unquote Swami's work. And do every work that we do as worship and every duty that we perform as an offering to Swami. So thank you for asking that question. If anything that I said was not clear and you want me to clarify it either online or offline, feel free to write to me and be happy to do that. All right then, listeners, it's time for me to wrap up this week's show. If you have a question based on the problems and issues that you're facing and you're wondering what is a spiritual way of looking at it or what is Swami's solution for that, you can write to me. My mail ID is prem@radiosaya.org. I am not going to give you the answers. The answers are all there in Swami's works, Swami's books, Swami's words. All I'm going to try to do is excavate them for you and probably present it in as clear a way as possible by me. So if you find that this program is useful and you would like to find your answers based on what we say or do in this program, feel free to write to me. That's my personal mail ID, prem@radiosaya.org, prem@radiosaya.org. If you wish to be anonymous, like the sister who sent us the question today, please inform me. And even otherwise, the mails that you sent to me are going to be read only by me. Today is the 31st of May and the day when many, many students come back from their vacation. Many, many students come into Swami's fold for the first time. It was the 31st of May when people like me also walked into Swami's fold one day. It's a very beautiful day for us. It's a very nostalgic day. I'm not going to start talking about that. I don't have the time for that. But I'm going to leave you with a song which probably encapsulates that feeling of seeing Swami for the first time and coming into Swami's fold. It's a beautiful song. I hope you enjoy it. On the other side of it, you will be joined by Brother Bishu and Sar Prakash for the last segment of today's Thursday Live, the Vahini Satsang. But I'll join you again next week at 7:30 p.m. for the next episode of Radio Sai Answering Booth.
चाहता है ये दिन पर बार आए, दिल चाहता है ये दिन। भाव आज तेरे प्यार को पाया है,
जिंदगी भर रहे तेरे संग एक यही अभिलाषा है। तोड़ के बंधन जात पात के ईर्ष्या और भेदभाव के,
आओ हम सब एक स्वर में गाएं गीत प्यार से।
दिल चाहता है ये दिन बार बार आए, दिल चाहता है ये दिन हमारे साईं से जो हमको फिर यूं ही मिलाए, हमारे साईं से जो हमको फिर यूं ही मिलाए। दिल चाहता है ये दिन बार बार आए, दिल चाहता है ये दिन बार बार आए।
साईं से जो हमको फिर यूं ही मिलाए, हमारे साईं